This one particular monastery, we had the opportunity to meet with the abbot of this monastery, and I asked him this question. I said, when we sit among you in the chanting halls, and we hear your prayers, we hear your toning in your ohms, in your ohms, in your ooms, in your mantras, in your mudras, in your chimes, and bells, and bowls, and gongs, in the incense for 14 and 18 hours a day, on the outside, I said, what happens to you on the inside? This is something you can't get from an ancient text. What happens to you on the inside? And this abbot smiled. He didn't really laugh at me, but he kind of chuckled. Maybe he laughed at me a little bit. He smiled and he said, you've never seen our prayers because a prayer cannot be seen. He said, what you have seen is what we do to create the feeling in our bodies. And the feeling is the prayer. Then he turned it around on me as the leader of our group. He said, how do you do it in your culture? And what I began to understand was that when we lost those texts 1,700 years ago, we began to believe that if we say the right words, the right number of times, the right moment that we've said the prayer, and while there may be prayers that work well this way, we also know that there are modalities of prayer that are beyond the words. They're based in the power of human feeling that we lost 1,700 years ago. We asked him about his libraries. He said, do you have ancient records, ancient texts that we could look at? And to make a long story very brief, he said yes, and he was happy to show them to us because of a friendship and a camaraderie that had developed. We were led down a series of hallways with 30-foot-tall Buddhas of compassion on either side into a darkened room, and all we could see was through the flicker of yak butter candles. And we began to see row after row after row of text after text after text, and we opened them to the translator. I said, ask him what's in these texts. And he said, everything. And I said, what do you mean, everything? And he said, we have a record of every spiritual tradition that has ever come to this place, and we keep them here. And he said, in many cases, we live them right now. It's very possible that what we see these Tibetan monks doing is actually stemming from the remnants at the basis of our own spiritual beliefs and traditions that were lost, and they have them where we had forgotten. The key is that feeling is the prayer. What we know is that prayer researchers today identify four modes of prayer. We call them informal or colloquial prayer, petitionary prayer, ritualistic prayer, and some forms of meditative prayer. And prayer is a very personal word, and it may not be the best word to use to describe what's happening here. And as good as all of these are, what we know is that there is an inner technology that may not fit into these categories, that there is a fifth mode of feeling-based prayer. And I'm going to share this with you now. It's a prayer that's based in feeling. Feeling the feeling as if the prayer were already answered, rather than asking through the thoughts that the answer come to pass. Feeling the feeling as if the prayer has already been answered. The Essene Gospel of Peace, one of the texts that was edited, reminds us, when our thoughts, body, and feeling become one, then you say to the mountain, mountain, move. And the mountain moves. And this may begin to understand, help us understand what this is all about. I'd like to share a brief story to help illustrate this concept, because stories are powerful. In the early 1990s, I was living in northern New Mexico, and a Native American friend of mine invited me to join him for a prayer of rain. That's going to be important in just a moment. During one of the worst droughts in the history of the American desert Southwest, I went with my friend. We met at a predetermined location. We went across several hundred thousand acres of very fragrant, high desert sage, and we came to a place that was so ancient, even his ancestors didn't know who put this place here. And here's the key. He said, this place is where the skin between the worlds is very thin. The many possibilities. I was not prepared. I had an expectation of what I thought would happen. I wasn't prepared for what I saw. My friend removed his Kmart work boots, stepped barefooted into this circle. He honored all of his ancestors, all of those who had come before him. He closed his eyes, placed a prayer mudra in front of his chest, and in just a couple of moments, he looked at his watch and he said, I'm hungry. You want me to get a bite to eat? And I said, I thought we came here to pray for rain. And he said, no. He said, if we prayed for rain, rain could never happen. Because the moment you pray for something to happen, what have you just said? It's not here now. Essentially, you're acknowledging, when you say, "Dear God, please let there be peace in the world," a very well-intentioned prayer, you may in fact be saying, "There is no peace here now." And I said, "What did you do when I saw you close your eyes?" And this is the way he described it to me. He said, "When I closed my eyes," he said, "I felt the feeling of mud moving between my naked toes, the mud from our Pueblo village that is so plentiful because there's been that much rain. And I smelled the smell of what it smells like when the rain bounces off the earthen walls of our Pueblo village. And I felt the feeling of what it feels like to run naked through chest-high fields of corn. The corn is so plentiful because there's been that much rain. And in that moment, my prayer became a prayer of thanks, gratitude, and appreciation." And I said, "Do you mean thanks for what you created?" And he said, "No, we never create anything." So there it is. He said, "We never create anything." He said, "My thanks is for the opportunity to choose which creation I experience." That is an example of a feeling-based prayer, our lost mode of prayer.